Welcome to our Bible study on the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 16, verses 21 through 28. And as always, I am assuming you have read the passage, have your Bible open before you, and that you remember our translations may not agree. This passage is the first of three passion predictions in the Synoptic Gospels. So a similar scene to ours is also recorded in Mark chapter 8, verses 31 through chapter 9, verse 1, and in Luke chapter 9, verses 22 through 27. And by the way, the word passion, as it is used here, is not referring to someone's passion for music or history or dancing or painting, and it is not meant to in the way of two lovers who have a passion for each other. The word passion, as it is used here, comes from the Latin verb patire, passasum, and means to suffer, to bear, to endure. And from this also comes our word patience and patient. And it refers to the short final period in the life of Jesus. If you ever saw the movie The Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson, then you know the movie mostly focused on Jesus' suffering and death. Our passage consists of two parts. First, what Jesus' messiahship meant for Jesus in verses 21 through 23, and what it meant for his disciples in verses 24 through 28. As we look at chapter 16, verse 21, the phrase, "from that time on," is not in Mark's account, but is used by Matthew as a way of indicating a clear turning point in Jesus' ministry. He now begins to prepare his disciples for his passion, which Matthew alone says will take place in Jerusalem. That's in verse 21. In Mark, Jesus begins by talking with the disciples. But in Mark chapter 8:34, Mark has Jesus addressing the multitudes, or the crowds, when talking about what discipleship means. While in Matthew, Jesus continues to speak only to the disciples through our entire scene. And in Matthew, that Jesus must go is not a reference to the Greek notion of fate or destiny, but rather refers to the will of God. Another difference is that Mark says in Mark 8:31, Jesus began to teach, the Greek word didasko, where Matthew says here at 16:21 that Jesus began to show, dekanumi. If Matthew had a copy of Mark, and remember, most scholars who accept the synoptic tradition think that both Matthew and Luke had a copy of Mark and used it for their own purposes, then any changes that Matthew made would have been intentional. And in Matthew, Jesus is often pictured as a teacher, for example, the Sermon on the Mount. So why would he substitute show for teach? How do we show what we believe? In Matthew, Jesus' suffering will be at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and scribes, which was equivalent to the Supreme Council of the Jews, the Sanhedrin. But in Mark chapter 8, verse 31, it says that Jesus will be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and scribes. Matthew seems to be softening the rejection of Jesus by the Jewish people, because remember, the faith community Matthew is writing for was possibly largely composed of Jews who did accept Jesus as Messiah, even if their leaders did not. As we come to the end of verse 21, we notice that, just like in all the other passion predictions of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, none of the disciples catch the positive promise that on the third day Jesus will be raised. Even if we skip ahead and read the crucifixion and resurrection accounts, the disciples do not expect to see a risen Jesus. They are crushed by the crucifixion and surprised by the resurrection, even though Jesus tells them three times that it will happen. Though, to be fair, he doesn't say that they will see Jesus. He just says that he will be raised. In verse 22, chapter 16, verse 22, Peter strongly resists Jesus' words. In Mark, chapter 8, verse 33, it only says that Peter rebuked Jesus, but doesn't tell us what Peter said. Luke doesn't mention a rebuke at all. Only in Matthew do we get the words that Peter speaks. The first word in Greek, helios, occurs only here and in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 12, which is actually quoted from Jeremiah chapter 31, 34. I will be merciful. So that literally, Peter could be offering a prayer. May God be merciful to you, Lord. This will not happen to you. Being merciful would imply that God prevents bad things from happening, which is how the NRSV, the New Revised Standard Version, translates it when it uses God forbid it. The contemporary English version, the CEV, has God would never let this happen to you. See, Matthew typically presents Peter and the disciples in a much more positive light than Mark. And here we see that Peter's rebuke of Jesus is more like a prayer. So that Peter was not being blasphemous or rebellious, he was saying something that probably most of us would have said in that situation. Peter's words can represent a real prayer. Literally, may God show mercy to you, Lord. This will not happen to you. Which can be understood as the convention, God forbid, type of prayer. The verse also says that Peter took Jesus aside. But that phrasing doesn't really catch the force of Peter's action. The REB, that stands for the Revised English Bible, which is different than the Revised Standard Version, which is what I usually use, and the Revised English Bible, which is a 1989 English language translation of the Bible that updated the New English Bible of 1970. Anyways, the REB translates that phrase, take hold of, which more accurately represents the Greek word proslambanomai, and it is intended as an upgrade from the 1970 translation, took him by the arm. In other words, the better wording is to say, take hold of. As we come to verse 23 of our chapter, we compare it to Mark 8:33. Jesus' response to Peter is presented as a rebuke. But here, Matthew drops the word rebuke and has Jesus said to Peter. Again, a softer presentation. Still, the words are sharp. And the rock on which Jesus will build the church in verse 18 is now a stumbling block or stumbling stone, which is the literal meaning of the Greek word skandalon, and we can hear our English word scandal. The use of the word Satan here isn't meant to give us a picture of someone in a red suit with horns and a pitchfork, but is meant to show that Peter is acting as a tempter, seeking to turn Jesus from the will of God, even if it is being done with good intention. The phrase, you are not on the side of God, can also be translated as, you are not thinking God's thoughts. In chapter 16, verse 24, as was already pointed out, Jesus is only addressing the disciples, which has the effect of focusing the teaching to those who have, perhaps like Peter, made the Christian confession, but are likely still thinking human thoughts rather than God's thoughts. The NRSV's translation, if anyone want to become my followers, is not accurate. The word, there is no word become in the Greek verse. The NIV has a better translation, if anyone would come after me. It puts the emphasis on making following a matter of the will of decision. Interestingly, the reference to the cross that is here in verse 24 is absent in verse 21, where Jesus predicts his death. He just says he will be killed. As we continue with chapter 16, verses 25 through 26, this dramatic saying is not merely a general idealistic principle. Both the context and the qualifying phrase, for me, for my sake, make the giving of one's life a matter of commitment to the confession of Jesus as the Christ. The Greek word psyche, often translated as soul, means life or life principle. And for Matthew, this is not an immortal part of human being, but it is the true self, the living self. Those who seek to preserve their lives by living selfishly end up actually forfeiting themselves, because the decision about confessing or denying Jesus must be, as we see in verses 27 and 28, made in the perspective of the end times, or the final judgment. And now we come to the last two verses, 27 and 28. The Son of Man, who has suffered, has been vindicated by God, and will be the eschatological, meaning the end times, judge. He will reward and punish according to our practice, not on the basis of the confession we have made verbally. The Greek word is singular. It does not refer to the deeds, plural, that we may do, but looks at our whole life as a deed, a practice, like the practicing of medicine. It is a vocation, a calling. For Matthew, faith is more than a confession. It is the way we live, having the right attitude, having the right mindset on the things of God and the behavior that results from that. In Mark, the end-time judgment is centered on being ashamed of Jesus and his words. But in Matthew, it is centered on being rewarded for living rightly, which we see in the parable of the sheep and goats in chapter 25, verses 31 through 46, for example. What some standing here are promised has been variously understood and certainly lends itself to multiple interpretations as well as confusion. After all, it's been 2,000 years. That's a long time to be standing. Was the judgment supposed to happen earlier and it has been delayed? How much longer will it be delayed? Jesus himself warns against calculating times and seasons, as we see in Luke chapter 17, verse 20 through 22. What is important is that Jesus calls us away from the idle speculation about the signs of the kingdom. And we see that in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 12, verses 38 through 39, and earlier in our chapter here, chapter 16, verses 1 through 4, and in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 13, verses 1 through 9. And Jesus insists that we must at all times behave like people prepared for that judgment, as we see in Matthew chapter 25 and in Luke chapter 12, verse 35 through 46. It is important to remind ourselves that our behavior does not flow from the belief that the end is near, but that God is near. And such nearness encourages us to follow the path of Jesus. Finally, Jesus' call to discipleship is not just about giving up things. Giving up things will not make us a Christian. It will only make us empty. The life of discipleship is about reorienting our life away from a focus solely on ourselves, not self-esteem and not self-abasement, not self-fulfillment or self-emptying. It is not about self-love or self-hate. The life of discipleship is about focusing on God and following Jesus. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.